You're listening to Sports Connections with David Smale, the show that brings you a fun and intimate look into connections throughout sports. Now here's your host, David Smale.
Sports can teach us so many things that translate to the rest of our lives. It can teach teamwork, perseverance, toughness, accountability, hard work, and the ability to adapt to changing circumstances. But maybe the best thing we can learn from sports is how to deal with failure. It's much easier to handle winning than it is losing, but in every competition, there's an equal number of winners and losers. If you can handle losing with grace, especially if you feel some of the blame for the loss, you'll be able to face the challenges of life much better. Lynn Elliott made 81.7% of his field goals in his career with the Chiefs. Unfortunately, he is most remembered for a playoff game against the Indianapolis Colts when he went 0-for-3 in the bitter cold on a field that was as hard as concrete and as slick as ice. Chiefs lost 10-7 in that game, and Elliott incurred the wrath of a region. But he's always accepted the criticism with grace and class, and that includes being willing to join us today. So, Lynn, welcome to Sports Connections.
Hey, glad to be here.
I've read several stories about you, and each one, the consistent thing about each one is how you've dealt with the results from that day. And I've always been impressed with the grace with which you've accepted the blame. How are you able to do that?
Well, I don't know about the grace part. I know it was painful. So I mean, I guess if you can be graceful with pain, but the fact was that, you know, the game ended the way that it ended, and it happens fast. When you're playing a playoff game, it's a loser go home scenario. And so, you know, all through the week, I mean, the Chiefs, we've got the week off, we've got home field advantage throughout the playoffs. The last thing you're thinking about is losing a football game. But when you get in that game and you start getting punched in the mouth a few times and you're fighting and you're scratching, you're clawing, especially at Arrowhead Stadium, you still always believe you're going to win the game. I don't think anyone on that team thought you were going to lose. It comes down to the last few minutes, last few seconds possibly, and you're out on the field with a chance to at least tie the game, you know, to push it into overtime, and you miss it, and the reality sets in. That's painful. I mean, that's breathtaking. That's gut-wrenching. I mean, it's a gut punch. It's because the guys that are out there on the field fighting so hard, you know, all season long, but all game long, you know, giving it what they've got. And no, not everyone on the field played perfect that day, but we still had a chance. And then you look up and you have no timeouts and the other team's kneeling the ball. That hurts. And so I knew when I missed the last kick of the day that was our last opportunity. And the feeling that you get that comes over you is a feeling you probably only get two or three times in your life. And it's one of just utter, I mean, can't use the word desperation, but you were just, you know, just totally obliterated by that feeling. And so there's nowhere to go. You got to go back into the locker room, and sure enough, there's cameras there. And so the only thing you can do is answer the questions. And I tried my best to answer them truthfully.
Yeah. It's interesting. You and I chat a little bit before we started the recorder. There are an awful lot of other players that didn't have their best game. I mean, yeah, you missed three field goals in really difficult conditions, but the team scored one touchdown. You know, we've talked about the fact how painful it was that others threw you under the bus. How tempting was it to say, yeah, but this guy dropped three passes, or that guy threw it to the wrong team three times, or this guy missed an easy tackle here? How tempting was that?
Well, it's easier 25 years from then now. You can go back and read the stat books, you know, and look at it. But the reality is, you know, when I saw the guys on our team fighting, I wasn't looking at their failures. I mean, because there's always another play. You know, Marty always had his teams prepared to play a game. And defensively, we were one of the top teams, you know, in football, no doubt. I don't know what our defense was rated, but it was without our defense being as good as we were, we're probably an 8-18, but the defense carried us that year. And, but one of the things Marty always preached was, you know, you have to win the turnover war. And at the end of the game, I mean, we had four turnovers. They had one. You're not going to win many of those games.
Yeah.
Hey, they attempted three field goals. They made one. And that was a difference in the game. We attempted three field goals and we made zero, but we turned the ball over four times. And at the end of the day, those turnovers, you know, are the same as missed field goals as well.
Yeah. Talk about the conditions. I mean, I know we talked before, my feet are still cold from that game 25 years ago. I was up in the stands. You were on the field. The field was as hard as concrete. I read something recently where the area where you had to practice, they had to put a rug down because you couldn't gain traction even to practice kicking. Just talk about how tough the conditions were to kick that day.
Yeah, the conditions in 1995, 96 are different than they are now. And I'm talking about the field conditions overall. Now you have heating coil elements, you know, under the field, and therefore you can put down new turf. You can establish roots. You know, you can kind of grow grass. But back then, there was no such thing as that. So the field was just frozen. I mean, I think the 2 weeks before we played Seattle, the last game of the season, I think it was, you know, 12, 13, 14 degrees that day. And it really didn't get much higher than that for the next 2 weeks. So the field was frozen solid. Now, it wasn't frozen ice, but it was frozen solid. But the sidelines was frozen ice. And so where I was kicking, we just had a piece of artificial turf that we put over there so that you could take a step on it, you know, without slipping and to fall to kick the ball. But things are different. We, you know, we didn't have heated jackets, you know, to wear, you know, I mean, you didn't have heated benches, you know, I mean, to sit on. And so, I mean, you had heat blowing over there, but you didn't have the things that you have. So it really is tough. I mean, it'd be the same as you sitting in the stands for, you know, all game long. And then it's time to go out there on the field and do what you're doing. It was hard to warm up. I do remember this. One thing that really stuck out was every game that I've ever kicked on a grass field, you've always had a cleat, you know, on your left foot, and you have interchangeable cleats, you know, on those cleats, depending on how hard the field is or how soft the field is. So you might go with a 3/8 or a 5/8 inch cleat, you know, you switch those cleats out. On this game, I had to go to artificial turf shoe on my plant foot, you know, to wear out on the game field. So that was odd. You know, you're basically using a tennis shoe, you know, on your plant foot, which meant that if you tried to go and kick at the same intensity that you kick every other kick that you've done, you know, since you were in high school, you're going to slip and fall. So, you know, there were some adjustments to be made. And obviously I didn't make the right adjustments.
And one thing you didn't mention was the football was like kicking a brick, wasn't it? It was pretty hard as well.
Yeah, and what's different than today? Today in the NFL, what they want is they want touchbacks. They don't want the football returned because of the concussions that are in the lawsuits that are going on with that.
Yeah.
Well, back when I was kicking, all they wanted was kickoff returns, and so what they did is they took your 2-inch tee and they gave you a 1-inch tee. They moved you back from the 35 to the 30, and then they gave you footballs that were called kicking balls, which the officials were in charge of, which means they were brand new balls right out of the package. So, you know, in today's world, you know, the kickers get to use the balls that they've prepared, and, you know, and then they get to kick off from a different area. But yeah, that definitely the football was hard that day.
You know, you've talked in stories that I've read, we talked beforehand about that you had one job to do, and that was to kick field goals. But here's the flip side of that. Saying that a kicker only has to do one thing is like saying a minister only has to work 1 hour per week, and that's Sunday between 11 and noon. Talk about the preparation that actually goes into being an NFL kicker.
And as time goes by, like, I'm sure the preparation today is a little bit different than it was, you know, back then. But the biggest adjustments that you have as a kicker, whether it's in college or the NFL, is you actually don't get live kicks until you play a game. So, you know, the team's over working on offense, the team's working on defense, and maybe on Friday you come together and you go through a field goal period, you know, together. But at the same time, during the field goal period, they're not actually trying to block the kick. You know, you're just got everyone lined up and everyone in their spots, and the defense is acting like they're doing something, but they're really not doing anything. So the experience that you get kicking is actually in a game. And, you know, So most of the time the kicker is over there on his own, you know, with the punter, you know, yes, we're kicking, we're working on our steps and, you know, our approach to the ball and, you know, and hitting the ball a certain way, but there's actually not a snap, you know, there's a, it's just the holder holding the ball, or maybe you're kicking without even a holder, you know, where you've got a little fake holder there. So I would say that today's, we'll just look at like Patrick Mahomes and look at probably the preparation that he does for being a quarterback now. It's different than the way Terry Bradshaw prepared for a game. You know, I mean, Terry Bradshaw showed up on Sunday and played football. You know, I mean, that's what he did. Patrick Mahomes is a student of the game. Tom Brady is a student of the game. So with the large contracts that have come, you know, over the last 20 years, I think the professionals have become more professional. So if I look back on something that I felt was one of my weak points, I would say that, you know, during the weeks when I was preparing for games, you know, I wasn't being as professional as you could be because nobody was, you know, I mean, you were out there goofing off and then on a, you know, Friday you came together and you kicked your field goals and on Sunday you kicked them in the game. But what you didn't ever do was practice kicking on a frozen field.
Yeah. Hard to do that in Liberty or St. Joseph or River Falls or wherever the training camp was in the summer. Hard to practice kicking on ice unless you're going to go into the indoor ice rink or something. So
you get to do that in January in the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now, it's interesting. You are one of the most accurate kickers in Chiefs history. You may be ranked second only behind Butker. I'm not sure exactly, but you're certainly one of the most accurate. Do you ever get to talk to anybody about your accuracy, about your success, or do people, if they remember that you kicked for the Chiefs, remember that Colts game?
Not in Kansas City. No, I don't think I've ever had anybody from Kansas City, you know, ask me that. I would say at the time that I left Kansas City, I think I was the most accurate kicker in the history of Kansas City. You know, and you're talking about, you know, Nick Lowry, who obviously is, you know, probably worthy of a Hall of Fame, and Jan Stenerud is in the Hall of Fame. But but as we progress, you know, the athletes that are out there get bigger, stronger, better. You know, they're just better at what they do. You know, the kicker for the Chiefs right now, Harrison Butker, is probably, I mean, one of the top three kickers in the NFL. I mean, he's a great field goal kicker, and I'm sure – his work ethic and the things that they work on or the technology side of it is different than what we did back when I played.
After the game against the Colts, and we'll keep going back to that, unfortunately, but talk about the reaction from your teammates. Were they supportive of you, you know, right after the game and in the days and weeks that followed?
There's a little bit of a blur there. You know, I mean, when you've been in a car wreck, the trauma that you've gone through, it's a little bit of a blur. Absolutely, there was people that were coming over, patting you on the shoulder, you know, on the head or whatever it was. I mean, I was devastated, as you should be, you know. I mean, you care about it. I mean, all I want to do is – there's probably nobody that wants to win more than I want to win, okay? And so just losing would make me cry. But losing and it being my fault, you know, is devastating. But I remember, you know, the Mark Collins, the Marcus Allens, the Lake Dawsons, Greg Minuskis, you know, the list could go on of people that came over there and patted you on the head. On the other side of it, I mean, I definitely remember, you know, the next day you have to show up for what's called, you know, your exit physical and your exit meeting with, you know, with your position coach and your head coach. And there was a lot of people that didn't even want to look at me, you know, I mean, so – and I'm not going, you know, into names with that, but at best it was 50-50.
Yeah. Well, and that really transitions into my next question, Lynn, that how did the events of that game hurt you? And obviously the obvious thing is you wanted to win. You weren't out there trying to miss those field goals, but is there still some lingering pain as you look back on it now that was caused by the reaction to that game?
Oh man, there's a lot of pain. I mean, probably what stands out the most is just the part or the portion of your heart, you know, that that cares, you know, that cared about the sport, that cared mm-hmm. about the game, that loved playing, you know, because it was a game, it was a sport, the competition side. When you saw, I don't know, I'm going to use the word venom, you know, that was shown by some of the fans, you know, by some of your teammates, the venom that came out from some of your coaches, you know, the things of that, you know, when you see that and you feel that, I don't know, it hardens you a little bit. And it did take something from me that day. That took a while for that to resonate, but as time went on, you know, my desire to get out there and practice kicking footballs by myself wasn't there, you know, and to get better, you know, that's what you have to do.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. And the flip side of that, though, talking to you now 25 years later, and the Chiefs getting ready, we're recording this as they're heading into the to that same weekend. Basically, they're the number one seed. They mm-hmm. have the best record in the AFC, and they're getting ready for that. How did the results of that game, how did that game in general make you a better person?
Well, I mean, in life, you're gonna. I mean, I talk to my kids about this all the time. I mean, to achieve great things, I mean, you have to try tough things, and a lot of people don't get out of their comfort zone. They don't want to get in front of someone and give a speech. They don't want to, you know, do what's uncomfortable, and they just stay in their little spot, not trying, and that's okay. Other than you're never going to achieve anything, you know. I mean, so to achieve something, you're going to have to take some risk. And most likely you're going to fail. And along the way, there's going to be people that tell you that you aren't good enough. And so, yes, that was a bad event. It basically was the end of my career. There was two more years where I tried to hook up with the team, but I didn't get where I wanted to get. But most of that was because I didn't have the heart. I mean, I didn't care. It's like, okay, you cut me, good. Get the heck out of here, you know, type deal. And so, you know, that hurt me. Now, on the other side of it, as I go through every other stage of my life, it helps me, because I've seen, I mean, I've been I've won a Super Bowl. I know what that feeling of like is, standing on the field, knowing that you're a vital part of a team. And I've got Super Bowl records, you know, that I actually hold. And so, but I also know the depth of, you know, of failing on the highest stage as well. But when it comes to everyday life, all I do is give my, you know, my best shot each day. One of the true things that I say, that, and I mean it, I say it all the time, is I've never had a day where I wasn't excited to go to work. And this was in the NFL or at Texas Farm Bureau where I work now. But I've also never had a day where I wasn't ready to go home, you know, where I'm ready to go see my family, to get away from work. Yes, I like what I do, and I want to be the best that I can be, but I also want to go home and enjoy myself and, you know, enjoy your friends and family.
So is it fair to say that the struggles from that day taught you how to put things in perspective, success and failure?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, you know, perspective, I mean, obviously it's different for each person, you know, I mean, it's through your own eyes. And
yeah.
You know, my birth mom, you know, she passed away when I was 7 years old, and it was devastating. Okay. Missing those field goals, you know, on that stage in Kansas City, you know, that was devastating. But whatever else that you know, watching my wife, my beautiful wife, we just celebrated our 23rd anniversary on January the 10th. You know, watching her battle breast cancer, you know, is devastating. I mean, the feelings that you go through and the thought, but when it comes to everything else that you're doing, it's kind of a piece of cake. It's fun, you know. I mean, so you know, you get to see the highs, but once you've seen the lows, you know, every day, you know, some guy cuts you off the road, I mean, you don't have to go run them over, you know. I mean, you'll be okay.
Yeah, when you're going through the cancer with your wife, and I've been through there twice with my wife with leukemia, and she's doing great now. When you're doing that, you're not thinking, yeah, and I also missed three kicks in a playoff game.
It
pales in comparison. It's not even a blip on the screen, is it?
Well, when your mom died of cancer when you were seven, and you look and one of your little kids is seven, you know, and your wife has cancer, you're going, this is real. You know, I mean, it can happen. And I, you know, that was definitely one of the things that hurt me the most in my life was losing your mom, you know, losing your best friend as a little guy. And so, you know, the football game part of it, yes, that was tough. And I still could be walking down the street today, and because it's that time of year. And I think like the first day you reached out to me might have been January 7th or 8th. I don't remember what day that game was, but I kind of got the weebie jeebies, like, oh crap, you know, something bad happened on this day, you know. And so, you know, there are times where you shake your head, because the reality is the guy that went 1 for 3 that day, his name's Kerry Blanchard, you know, for the Colts.
Yeah,
Kerry and I, you know, we were in college together. We battled each other. He was at Oklahoma State, you know, kicking extra points for Barry Sanders, and I was at Texas Tech. You know, that's where I was. And but we played each other in a game in Stillwater, and then we played each other in a game in Tokyo. You know, believe it or not. And so I know Kerry, but he was 1 for 3 that day, made a 30-yard field goal. I was 0 for 3. The next year, he was all pro. The next year, absolutely, I could have been all pro. Why couldn't you have been all pro? You know, I mean, all you got to do is have a good season. And so, you know, on the other side of it, things are going really well for me right now. And Kerry had a heart attack and passed away in his 40s. You know, I mean, so life has these ups and downs. And I think I'll take the missed field goal, you know, and still be walking around today. So. But Kerry was an amazing person. But he made 1 of 3 and I didn't. And, you know, and it kind of changed our destination when it came to kicking.
Yeah. And it could be that had you made 2 out of 3, then he would have been run out of Indianapolis. Instead, they went on to the next round.
You're exactly right. If I would have been 0 for 2 and the great Marcus Allen, who was probably the one person that day that played his butt. I mean, his game that day is legendary, you know, for that type of a field. But let's say he breaks one more tackle and goes in for a touchdown and we win 14-10. No one's talking about the 2 kicks you missed. That's old news, you know.
Yeah.
And so, but that's how close it can be, you know, from being you know, a guy that's all pro getting a big contract to a guy that's, you know, walking on the streets, handing out his resume, looking for a job somewhere, you know, but that's sports, you know, that's the way that it is. That the one thing about kicking is there's 32 kickers in the NFL. There's no backups.
Yeah.
So you either start or you're unemployed. If you would have given me the chance to be I'm making this up, the backup kicker in Buffalo, well, it wouldn't be long before I'd be the starting kicker in Buffalo. You'd figure it out, you know.
Yeah.
But that's not the case. So, I call it musical chairs. When I lost my chair, to get a chair, it's pretty tough. You know, you got to beat out Harrison. Look how Harrison got his spot.
Yeah.
You know, I can't remember which kicker was there, but one of them got hurt. Harrison comes in, and next thing you know, that dude's out of a job, you know. Yeah. And he goes somewhere else, but then someone else loses a job. And that's the way it works in the NFL.
I want to talk about Arrowhead Stadium. You told me in our email exchanges that you have a fondness for Arrowhead Stadium, but you haven't been back since that game. Is that correct?
That's correct. Absolutely. Of all the stadiums that I've played in, and there's only a couple that I haven't played in. I haven't played at Lambeau Field. But I've also played in some stadiums that aren't around anymore, like Mile High Stadium and RFK and, you know, other Texas Stadium, you know, in Dallas.
Right.
Really, by far, Kansas City Arrowhead Stadium is the best stadium that I've ever been in. The crowd, in my opinion, acts like an SEC college football crowd. They have their own band. There's chants. You know, I mean, if there's never been anyone that sat at Arrowhead Stadium for the first time and heard the Star Spangled Banner and then heard the word, you know, Chiefs yelled at the very end, the hair didn't stand up on the back of their neck, you know. And so, Yeah, it was wonderful. And, you know, it's sad that I haven't been back. I mean, I'm not really welcome there. I mean, I wouldn't go buy a ticket to go to a game, although I'd love to see, you know, Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and, you know, the crew, you know, Andy Reid's bunch out there playing. But, you know, I've never made my way back to that stadium.
Would you go back if you were invited by the Hunt family?
Well, of course I would go back if I was invited. I would say that being invited by the Hunt family would be about the only way, you know, that I would ever, you know, go into that. And, unless Patrick Mahomes said, hey, you know what? You know, Lynn, we want you there, but I don't have a relationship with Patrick, so that's not going to happen. But yeah, no, I mean, it is sad because now my family, we're still Chiefs fans, okay? Just because people in Kansas City don't like me doesn't mean that I don't like the Chiefs. I mean, I played there. I know how special it is. I mean, we'll be watching games, and I go watch what's fixing to happen right here. Listen to this crowd, you know, and watch what the other quarterback's going to do. You know, I mean, mistakes are fixing to happen. I'm telling you, it's going to happen right now. And that when it gets that loud, just magic, you know, magic happens. That same magic, you know, happens. It used to happen at Mile High Stadium for John Elway too. You know, when it got loud, you know, things started to happen. But the sad part is, you know, I take my kids, we get invited to, you know, Dallas Cowboy games, you know, we go, even though it's not Texas Stadium, it's a better stadium, you know, AT&T Stadium. But we do have alumni stuff. We go there and they get to see that, you know, from time to time, but they've never got to see Arrowhead. And for that matter, they've never really got to experience Kansas City.
Yeah.
And Kansas City is a wonderful place. Kansas, I would say that two games before, you know, I had a rough day in January. If you would have asked me, where do you think you're going to live the rest of your life? I'm like, man, I may live in Kansas City. You know, I mean, it'd be in the suburb, Overland Park, or, you know, I mean somewhere out there. But I absolutely, that'd be a great place to live.
You know, it's interesting. I read something, and I read a whole lot of articles about you in the days leading up to this interview, that it was, and correct me if I've got the facts wrong, but it was because you weren't still in Kansas City that you were able to meet your wife. So, you know, there's a reason for everything. I personally believe in God's timing and his perfect plan. But talk about the fact that you weren't supposed to finish and you weren't supposed to live the rest of your life in Kansas City. There was a different plan for you.
I absolutely believe in what you're saying right there. And things happen for a reason and you don't understand exactly why they're happening. And sometimes they hurt you, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, I end up, you know, back in Texas, you know, back in Waco. And I happened to end up bumping into my wife. Now, ironically, I had bumped into her about 10 years earlier. But at the time, you know, we were visiting at this one area where we were, and I realized, and I'm, you know, 23 and she's 16 or 17. That's not going to work out, you know, but, you know, or I think I was 18 and she was 13. And I was like, well, maybe 10 years from now, you know, that math looks a little better, 28 and 23. And it just so happens we bumped into each other and she brought that to my attention that we had met before. And you know, from that day on, I dropped everything that I was doing. And I was focused at that point, you know, my heart felt better and I was focused and I knew what I was going to go for. And we've had a great 23 years ever since.
That's awesome. Now you mentioned that you root for the Chiefs. You're probably fairly proud of another former Texas Tech player. You said you don't have a relationship with Patrick Mahomes, but how fun is it as a former Texas Tech football player to say, yeah, he's one of us?
Oh man, it really doesn't get a whole lot better than that. When I got inducted into the Texas Tech Hall of Fame, I think it was either 2014 or 2015, but I'm sitting up in the press box talking to Kirby Hokut, who's the athletic director at Tech. And at that time he was a college football playoff, you know, maybe the head chair, you know, of that, well, we're sitting there and Texas Tech, is, I mean, Mahomes, I think we had 56 at the end of the game and Oklahoma State had 63, you know. And, yeah. And he was asking me, he was like, you know, what do you think of this? And I said, I think we need some defensive linemen, you know. Yeah. I mean, I said, I don't know much, but I know that you're going to win with defensive linemen, you know. But you had Mahomes out there that no matter how many points the other team scored, he was right there with them, yeah. You know. And so we didn't know. I mean, I've seen him in many college games in person, you know, and you didn't really know the magnitude of how great he was because the system, you know, that Texas Tech had at that time that kind of, you know, Cliff Kingsbury had kind of inherited from or learned from, you know, Mike Leach was so phenomenal. But you could tell he was super special. But, you know, from the story that I heard is when Andy Reid brought him in and, you know, interviewed him, kind of did a little quarterback interview, he realized real quick that Mahomes has a kind of a photographic memory and his sports IQ is second to none. And that's what it takes to be a professional. He had the tools, right. But you have to have that. And that's what, you know, that Tom Brady has it and Patrick Mahomes has it. And a lot of other people wish they had it.
Yeah. Yeah. You said you don't have the personal relationship, but you do have the Texas Tech bond. If he comes to you sometime and says, how do you deal with failure in this game? And I'll preface that and say, if he ever has a bad game, because so far we haven't seen one, but if what would you say to him if he said to you, how do you deal with failure?
Well, that scenario could never happen because that's the same as saying, what if Tom Brady came to you and said, Lynn, how do you deal with failure? You know, but let's just say the old Lloyd Christmas one in a million deal. You know, there's a one in a million chance that he came to me. You know, the thing about Patrick is he is going to have a bad game at some point. I mean, all football players have a bad game. And the reason that he could have a bad game is he's a competitor. And he's probably going to go out there and play with injuries and you're not even going to know it. You know, you're not going to know that he has a sprained right thumb and it's 18 degrees out there. You know, well, how well does that sprained right thumb work,
yeah.
You know, when it gets hit, you know, on a helmet to play before as well. And so, but someone like Patrick, they're going to bounce back. You see it, you see him throw passes. He has playmakers on his team.
Yeah.
And he trusts his players. But more importantly, he's smart enough to find a way to change the formation, to put someone in motion, to get that mismatch where there's one-on-one. You know, you put Kelsey one-on-one or, you know, Cheetah one-on-one or Tyreek one-on-one with Sammy Watkins one-on-one, then he just throws the ball up there and lets them make a play. You know, that's what he does. But there's going to be a time where they slip, you know. Patrick doesn't always make the perfect throw. He just makes the perfect read, you know, and he throws it to the guy. But sometimes that guy slips and falls, you know. And so I know Patrick at some point will have a bad game, but he'll bounce back. And he's a legend. He's going to be a legend, no doubt about it.
And the ambition that he shows, you know, part of it is growing up in sports with his dad playing Major League Baseball, but the confidence. I remember watching the game against the Texans last year when they fell behind 24-0 in the second quarter. In fact, I remember Texans were up 21-0 and they had fourth and short on like the 20-yard line and they kicked a field goal. And I remember saying to my wife, Chiefs are going to win this. Texans just gave up a chance to go up 28. And she looked at me like I was nuts, which which I am, but that is irrelevant. But yeah. Seeing him on the sideline saying to his teammates, this game is not over. Did you ever play with somebody that had that kind of confidence, that kind of swagger that you just thought, no matter what the situation was, that he was going to succeed?
Man, that's a great question. And the answer is yes, I absolutely have, because all the great ones are the same. There's only a few great leaders. I mean, there's only a few of them. But you know, the Cowboy team that I was on, the 92-93, you know, Super Bowl teams, I mean, you had Aikman, Emmitt Smith, Michael Irvin, Charles Haley. I mean, you could go down the list and name them, but here's the deal. Not one of those people wanted to lose, okay?
Yeah.
All they wanted to do was win. And, yeah, they felt like they should have got paid to play the game, but they wanted to win. And so, you know, Patrick's different. He's different in a sense that you know, he is a leader the same way that Joe Montana was a leader, you know, but he has way more talent than Joe Montana has. You know, Joe did it. He has those four rings and he has those three, you know, Super Bowl MVPs. And until you beat that, you're not better than Joe Montana, right?
Right.
But Joe Montana doesn't have his talent. But Patrick does have Joe's brain and he does have his leadership capability. So the sky is the limit with Patrick. You know, it really is. And you can tell he's in it for the long haul, just like Tom Brady's in it for the long haul. And so, but, you know, Troy Aikman was as good a quarterback as there was, but his team was so good, he didn't have to do a ton. You know, I mean, hand it to Emmitt, let him run, throw it to Michael, you know, he'll make a play. You know, throw it to Novacek, and you need to bail out. He'll be there. He's always open, you know. But Troy was a great leader. He was a great competitor. And there you go. You get those Super Bowls, you know. Yeah. I mean, he's got three of them, you know. And so Patrick's got the first one. But to get the second one, to get the third one, the ball has to get – the Chiefs do have the best team and the best opportunity of anyone out there. But when you play a loser-go-home game, you know, the same thing that happened to us can happen.
Yeah.
You know, the ball can bounce the wrong way. You know, things cannot go your way. So Mahomes is a leader. He's going to go down in history as one of the best. But you have to have talent around you, and he does. But will you have talent around you the next 10 years? That comes down to your general manager and your head coach.
Wrap up with this, Lennon. I appreciate the time today. I've enjoyed this very much. I know you now work for the Texas Farm Bureau. I'll ask the question this way and then kind of summarize it. How do you define success? You know, what is important? In other words, what is important in your life? You've moved on from football. You've got a family. You've got kids. How do you define success?
Yeah, again, another great question. And to me, success is defined by an answer that I already gave you earlier, and that is there's just never been a day where I wasn't excited to go to work, whether it was in Kansas City, you know, or Dallas or at Texas Farm Bureau. But there's never a day that I'm not, you know, when I get through with this podcast, wrap up a few things over here, I'll be ready to go home and see my family, you know, and see my wife and, you know, play with my kids and, you know, and do what you're doing. And so, I just, when I wake up, I'm ready for the day. And when I go to bed, I'm ready to go to sleep. You know, I'm tired. And so, you know, for me, I am happy that every day is not perfect. We have challenges every day. I mean, every day of my life, there is challenges that are going on. And luckily my wife's back there, you know, fighting left and right, you know, all day long to make sure that, you know, that most of those challenges are met. But we do, both she and I, we get up each day and we fight as hard as you can fight till the end of the day. And then we pass out, you know, but we're ready to do it. I mean, success is being happy and I'm happy. I'm content. I am enjoying this podcast with you. I'm enjoying it. There's nothing about this podcast that's painful, but we're talking about some painful memories. You know, and that was painful. It was painful that day. It was painful the way that, like I said, some of the people that were close to you treated you. Some of the people that you thought should have stood up for you didn't stand up for you.
Right.
But now that we're removed from that, I cannot wait for the Chiefs to play, you know, this weekend. And I guarantee you, everyone, my wife was in Nashville, Tennessee with my two daughters that are 21 and 17 this last weekend. And she comes back, she says, oh my gosh, I saw this lady, this girl was walking around and she had the coolest Chiefs toboggan that I've ever, I'm getting one, I'm going to find that toboggan. I mean, that's what she said to me, you know, I mean, that's what she wanted to talk about. So we do care about the Chiefs, and my two daughters, you know, one's already at Texas Tech and the other one's headed there. So they take a lot of pride in Patrick Mahomes as well, you know. And now don't get me wrong, we like the Cowboys. They're just not any good right now. So
just wrap up with this. Your wife's name and you just have the two daughters?
So my wife's name is Joy Elliott. And then I have two daughters, Emily Elliott, that's 21, and she's the she's actually now the president of Pi Beta Phi, her sorority there. My youngest daughter is Remy Elliott, and she's a talented cheerleader. She's captain of her cheer squad. She's headed off to – she's a very good soccer player as well. She's headed to Tech. And then I have a little boy. He's only 10. His name's okay. Eli Elliott. But when he introduces himself to his teachers and, you know, the girls in his classroom, he's Elijah, you know, so Elijah Elliott. So – He's kind of what we're living through right now. He's coming into his own. He's now getting to ask questions like, Dad, do you remember, do you know that guy? Or do you remember, have you ever played on that field? And so we're having real fun, teaching him now.
Well, that's awesome. I've had a lot of fun today as well. And I appreciate your time. Appreciate, again, your willingness to talk about painful times and what you've learned from that and how they may have, you know, may have hurt you, but also how they've made you better. So I do appreciate that. And I wish you the best moving forward.
You bet. And good luck with your podcast moving forward.
Thanks for listening to Sports Connections with David Smail. Make sure to subscribe, follow, and rate the show from your favorite podcast platform. You can learn more about David Smail and his work by visiting davidsmailbooks.com. Don't forget to join us weekly for new episodes. Until next time.